At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, a show, the show, where we, me, Dan, he, Dan, talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, robots, dinosaurs, dragons, swords, crime queen pins, flightless birds masquerading as gangsters, tournaments, and so forth, however much we like. I am Dan Selke. He is Daniel Roman. Daniel Roman, how are you?
I am spectacular. I'm excited to be here today and talk about some Westeros stuff. Some, as you said, some flightless birds and gangster stuff. I'm especially excited for that this week. And all the usual stuff we hit. How are you doing, Dan? And how are all of you in the chat?
Yes. Hello. Good to see you, Andrew. Good to see you, Martha. Good to see everybody. I'm doing good. I'm here. Thank you, Andrew. I agree. Definitely one of my best intros. It's about the penguin, by the way. The flightless birds. Apparently, Daniel's really into it. I'm really into it, too. We'll talk all about it. I'm doing well. If you're watching the video, I got my dog Scruffy in the background. There he goes. Just say his name. He pops up a little bit, kind of black.
He perked up.
He does. He knows his name. Dogs can know up to like 60 words, I want to say. Although I'm making that up, so please don't quote me on that. I'm just plucking up out of the thin air. Way more than cats can know. And we're going to talk about some new news on the Game of Thrones spinoff front. We're going to talk about the penguin. We're going to talk about some other things we're watching. And then we're going to bring it home with a quick news lightning round you won't forget. Why? Not because it's particularly special. Just because you don't forget any of them. So, Daniel, let's start here with a Song of Ice and Fire author, Game of Thrones creator, occasional grumpy man on Maine, George R. R. Martin, talking about his recent visit to the United Kingdom. That's true. Please don't fact check me. No one said we were going to be doing fact checking here. Where he visited the set of another new Game of Thrones prequel series coming up sometime next year. We don't know quite when yet. And George R. R. Martin is loath to talk about it because HBO smacks him down when he says specifics. Called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Or is it? This thing is based on Martin's Duncan Egg novellas, and he described it himself in a little blog post as smaller in scale, more personal, with more humor, more focus on character, but there is danger and death as well. Lords and ladies and princes it has, but they share the stage with more small folk this time around. And he took some of these great pictures, like here he is with some of the creatives behind it. You got the director Owen Harris on the left, some elderly man with glasses and a beard and a cap next to him, Peter Claffey, who plays Dunk, kind of the main role, Dunk in the Tall, next to him, and then showrunner Ira Parker, who was a House of the Dragon writer and apparently is just gonna hit the bong and surf right after this. I didn't know he looked like that. He looks great. He's kind of got your hair a little bit. I mean, blonder, but
hey, you gotta respect it. You gotta respect it. I had no idea what Ira Parker looked like. I assumed he was older for some reason.
Yeah, maybe I don't know why I did. Me too.
Maybe because I knew he had worked on this stuff before A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. But yeah, it's cool to see these guys all together like this. Owen Harris, very notably, was the director of the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror, which is widely regarded as like one of the best episodes of the show. And you can also see like some of the tents in the background there, because it's a mild spoiler, not really a spoiler. Martin talked about the tourney at Ashford, and this first season, which is the first Duncan Egg novella, The Hedge Knight, takes place at a tourney. And I have a feeling this tourney is going to look better than any that has appeared in any of the Game of Thrones shows so far. So I'm really excited about that. That's going to be really cool.
I have two notes. A, I agree with Victor that Ira is kind of a grandpa name. So I think I heard the word Ira, the name Ira Parker, and I also just Fair. Pictured an older person. I just did. But it doesn't have to be. Anybody can be named Ira. And
that's second, what we're learning today.
This whole story, based on the first Duncan Egg novella, The Hedge Hunter, set at a tournament about 190 years before Game of Thrones. Sorry, just 100 or 90. Not 190. 100 or 90 years before Game of Thrones. This knight named Dunk enters a tournament. Those are the lists. Horses kind of charging on each side. Mm-hmm. And I like what Martin had to say about it being kind of smaller, more intimate, smaller budget, more humor, more focus on character. Because, Daniel, we touched last week on how the big post-Game of Thrones fantasy boom, where we had like things like The Rings of Power and The Wheel of Time and The Witcher all coming in, not to mention stuff like Foundation, sci-fi stuff coming in, all this big, giant, epic stuff. And we were wondering, is this going to burst? Because it feels like it's a bit too much and that there's not enough return on all of it. And I think something like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms or The Hedge Knight might be the kind of pivot that is needed. Like, everybody is going for this big, giant, epic kind of, you know, dragons and battles and world-spanning events. And it's kind of gotten away from what made Game of Thrones a success in the first place, which was this pretty intimate, comparatively simple story at the beginning. And something that's a little smaller and more focused, that doesn't break the bank, that doesn't force a network to spend $20 million an episode, that can be a fun, breezy, entertaining thing, could, I think, bring some real energy into this space and be like, because all these shows are like too big to fail. They're all cost like $100 million. They all come out with such high expectations. One that's a little bit more of like a shaggy dog, a bit more of a dark horse, a bit more that's like light in its feet and not so top heavy, not just with effects and kind of story, but with tone, could be something really interesting and exciting and energizing to this space. I think
they're
doing a fun zag.
I totally agree with that. I think it's a great choice because, you know, fantasy nerd that I am, I obviously love that we've had all these big high budget genre shows. Sure. But I do think that the budgets have gotten kind of out of control. When studios are dropping like, you know, upwards of $200 million on a season of television, you know, it's easy to look back at something like Thrones, which I don't think ever really had a budget like that, except for maybe like its final season. And like, it does feel like they're getting away from kind of what made it good in the first place. I think about that sometimes with things like The Witcher, with its earlier seasons, they like inserted a battle that like happens off screen in the books and like things like that, where it's like, you're kind of abusing having the budget and maybe you're missing the point of what made the thing moving in the first place. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, and specifically this first one, The Hedge Knight, where was it in the comments? Divine Sharika says, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is pretty short and simple. It has more than enough dialogue to, it shouldn't be difficult to adapt this. My hopes are high for this show. I totally agree with that. Like, everything Martin's saying about more focus on character, more personal, smaller in scale, like, that's all very true, like, to the novella in the first place. So I feel like on an adaptation front, this is great. I feel like in terms of showing, oh, yes, you can have a good fantasy show without it needing to cost $200 million, it's good on that front, too, which is almost ironic because like Game of Thrones showed you could have these big high budget fantasy shows and they're great and people would show up for them. And now a spinoff of it might show like, but maybe don't spend your whole bank account on it. You know, I think there's some irony to that, but yeah, my hopes are very, very high for this show too.
I mean, we get to the point, and yes, I second Urtak. Please don't forget, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, throw money at us. But yeah, I mean, in House of the Dragon,
I don't even know how you would do that, but yes,
just wad up a 20 and toss it at your screen.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
In House of the Dragon, it got to the point where the best information we have is that the reason that second season finale felt so kind of anticlimactic because they couldn't do the battle they wanted because they ran out of money and there was a budgetary concern. That, I think, is a sign that things have gotten a bit out of control and that taking it back to more intimate is probably a very good idea, which I think is something like this could have a chance of doing. And by the way, someone said up above that I think Cassandra, the House of Dragon, had source materials to mess it up. And we're talking about how this should be a pretty easy thing to adapt. The vibes on this are great. Martin loves it. He visited the set. He was talking about the excitement on the set was palpable. Everyone I met seemed to be in great spirits and loved what they were doing. And Duncan Egg, Peter Claffey, and Dexter Soul Ansel, respectively, looked as if they had just walked out of the pages of my book, and the chemistry between them was just perfect. So he's really high on it. He said that he got to watch the first episode. They sent it to him, like a really rough cut of it. So it's also pretty close. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's done filming. And he loved it. Can't wait to see more. It's looking up. And I like House of the Dragon a lot, too. I am definitely one of those who was a little frustrated last season with some of the choices they made. I liked some, I didn't like others. And I'm looking for something to kind of reinvigorate my love for this world. And it seems like this is a good chance of doing that. I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I don't want to say I don't love about House of the Dragon, but it is just by nature a part of House of the Dragon, is that it's a tragedy. Like spoiler for people who haven't read Fire and Blood, but like inherently the Dance of the Dragons is a Shakespearean tragedy set in Westeros. So by nature, it is a bleaker story. It's a darker story. It's about a family tearing itself apart and murdering each other, basically. Duncan Egg is the complete opposite. Like, there's still deaths, there's still bloodshed, there's still dangerous situations, but like, it's a knight and a squire. The squire's real mouthy, the knight is always threatening to give him a clout in the ear for mouthing off. Wow. Like, that's the tone of this thing. It should be a blast, and it's six episodes doing a complete novella. Again, it's very different than even Thrones, where they were big 1,000-page chonker novels that all run one into the next. Each season of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms should be a full story, because that is the nature of the way the novellas work. I'm really excited about this one. Fingers crossed that it's good. And like you said, the it seems like Camp Martin is very optimistic about it. It seems like the people who've worked on the show loved working on it. You're right that it did rap. I know, like, Peter Claffey and Dexter Saul Ansel shared their like rap kind of messages and what have you. And Peter Claffey, shout out to him, had a rhyme from the novella as his rap message. So they're taking the source material to heart here. That really means much of anything, but it made me happy, damn it. So... yeah.
Here's a question for you from Bubo Bubo, because you've read the novellas. I am going to read them very soon. I guarantee it. I'm almost done with the Wheel of Time book. Do you think, like Bubo Bubo asked, that the second novella is much worse, if you can say that, than the first and third?
No. The second one is The Sworn Sword. I really like that novella personally. I didn't love the third one. The third one is actually my least favorite, which is The Mystery Knight. I think that one gets a lot of points with the fandom because it's fills out some of the lore about the Blackfyre Rebellions. Like Chris is saying, I hope they show the Blackfyre Rebellions. They will have to show the second one if they get far enough, because that is specifically what the Mystery Knight is about, if I remember correctly, is the second Blackfyre Rebellion. The first one takes place before the Hedge Knight. So I don't, unless they show it like a flashback glimpse of it, there's no way they could show the first Blackfyre Rebellion. It's not really necessary to understand what's going on. Like, you kind of pick up on bits of it because of things people are saying. And then the Sworn Sword really digs into what the fact that the Blackfyre Rebellion happened, what that means for people, like lords who were sworn maybe to one side or the other. So yeah, I loved the Sworn Sword. Bubo. Second one is more like a filler. I totally disagree with that. Totally disagree. I mean, it's its own standalone adventure. So like in that way, are they all not filler in their own way? But I think the Sworn Sword gives a lot of really important context that makes both other novellas better.
I mean, again, I've read them yet. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, you know, is the entirety of the Star Wars franchise not just filler between the great plays of Shakespeare? If we want to get really into it.
Deep.
I mean, I
like it.
I do know what I don't know what you mean about kind of I think that a standalone fun adventure is reward in itself, like a well-told story that's paced nicely and written well and imagined richly. I give me it. I don't really need to connect to something bigger as long as it's entertaining me. And I'm looking forward to reading this, looking forward to the show. And I want to run this by the lot of you. So in his blog post, Martin said that the title, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, is actually, which is the title of his kind of book that combines three novellas into one, and it sells in the Seven Kingdoms.
Yep.
It's still under discussion that there, he also suggests, and it's hard to know if he's just saying this or if it's actually a thing. He also suggests that they're still considering calling it The Hedge Knight, which is the title of the first novella. Now, I polled our folk on Twitter. We got 225 votes about, and I asked, which title would you prefer? About 60% said A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, and about 40% said The Hedge Knight. I'm going to go ahead and ask the rest of you here, what do you prefer? And I will say I am firmly The Hedge Knight. Shorter, simpler.
Are you?
Sweet. Yes. Shorter, simpler, okay. Sweeter, easier to remember, easier to say, easier to pass on. Kind of like fits the more intimate tone of the show, I think. It sounds a little less epic. And also, just as someone who writes about this stuff, I don't want to write that out every time. I just don't want to. So I much prefer the Hedge Knight. How about you?
That's fair. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms doesn't leave a lot of room on headlines. It's going to take up a lot of characters. So I feel that. I will say I do get the feeling this is George just talking just a little bit, mainly because like HBO, pulling back the curtain here for people a little bit, like, the press site where HBO hosts Images already has it listed as A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So I don't know how much of a debate there really is still at this point. Like, they have used that title in official marketing at this point. So I'm not sure. As for which I like better, that's really hard. Like, I've always liked A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Like you said, that's the name of the omnibus fix up novel, whatever you want to call it, that combines the three that you can get. And if you don't have it and you haven't read these, you should pick up a copy because it is fully worth it. But I think they're both really good titles. I think The Hedge Knight and House of the Dragon, they kind of fit together a little bit better as like Game of Thrones spinoffs.
Yeah,
maybe, you know, all of those are a little shorter. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is a little bit cumbersome, so I think that's fair. And you know, The Hedge Knight is the name of this first novella that this is based on, but it's still applicable. Yeah, it's still applicable even after this. So I think a Hedge Knight, is an actual thing. It's not just a phrase that means nothing. It's specifically an unsworn knight, so I don't know how that will continue to be the case for Dunk as the stories go on. Yes, you have an arm up or a hand or something.
Yeah, you in the front row question. I explained this in another episode. I already have my explanation for this. My idea is, let's say that the show goes on for seasons and seasons and Dunk and Egg become these bigger historical figures. I like the Hedge Knight because guess what? And by the way, what? Daniel, in his heart, Dunk is always a humble Hedge Knight. Oof. No matter how high he rises, it'll tie it all back.
Chills.
And also, chills. It'll be simple to say. So that's my defense of why the Hedge Knight is the better title.
Okay, you are making a really good case for the Hedge Knight, I must say. And I do like that in his heart, Dunk is always a Hedge Knight. And I, you know, we haven't seen the later Dunk stories because we've only gotten three of these novellas. But I could see that being kind of his trajectory. Dunk, if for listeners, if you don't know this, I believe that Dunk is... this is true, but I don't know how much it's really been like rock solidly confirmed in the lore, but Dunk is supposed to be an ancestor of Brienne of Tarth. Sure. So think about that, very earnest. I'm a knight for the sake of being a knight, to be honorable.
Male Brienne.
Good stuff. I could go with either title. But, you know, you're making me like the Hedge Knight a little more than I expected to.
I mean, again, HBO, we know that all of you watch this from Casey Bloys to George R. R. Martin to Ryan Connell. Everyone does. So just take our advice. I think this is great advice. The Hedge Knight, go for it. But you're right. You're also right that fully they've already advertised the Pleasures of Kingdom. So I think I'm talking out my ass here, but it's still fun. Victor has the right of it. Please don't make it so I have to write like KOTSK, AGOTS, THK. Please, no. Just make this simple. Simple is good. When you tell your friend to watch a show, do you want to say like, you know, you should watch The Penguin or you should watch The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power? Like, they'll leave before you're done saying it. Like, things travel
better
if they're short and quick and snappy and memorable. It's just... just
basic. Andor.
Andor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywho, some other pictures we got here. We got another one of, I believe, Peter Claffey or a knight as It looks fun. It looks like a fun set. And George R. Martin.
Shout out a thing about that dunk? About that dunk one. So that is Dunk. I love, so he's got a battered shield on his back. Without getting into the spoilers too deep, Dunk getting his getting armor and getting his shield repaired and stuff like that are parts of the Hedge Knight. So I love this shot because I love seeing the battered shield on his back. You'll understand more once you read it or once we watch it. But yeah, great detail. I can't wait to see more.
It looks like they're sticking close to the source material. They're really pulling a ton. You can just see from the shots. I think that's why everybody feels so good about it. It seems to be having the good moods. And then George R. R. Martin with Tamsin Crawford, who plays Tanzel, who was a character we'll meet eventually. And I'm sure you already know.
Yes. Yes. She's a puppeteer who Dunk meets at the tourney.
Very cool. And Victor has a good point. I'm not sure I agree, though. Like, I know that a couple of folk have talked about how you want a title, back to titles, that, I don't know, is more appealing to a lot of people or that won't put them off. And he says that Andor's title will be off in general audiences, the reason why ratings were a bit low. I don't know about that. I'm going to guess that's more about because Andor is such a very, very different sort of Star Wars show than every other Star Wars show movie has been made. I think that if you have a great show and that... if you market it right, you should pick the title that's best for it. And then people will learn to love that. I don't think that you really have to, at least if you have confidence in your show, lure them in with, unless the show isn't very good. You don't need to go fishing.
You
like
gotta lure them in with a good title.
Like, I'm sure the Rings of Power stuck the Lord of the Rings in front of it because it wanted to appeal to Lord of the Rings fans who might otherwise not realize that was what it was about. And in terms of the Rings of Power, it's a huge expenditure. It's this big, giant, historically expensive series. Okay, I get it. Hedge your bets. Do everything you can to get eyeballs on this thing. And also, the Rings of Power, like, is kind of a little bit mid, so maybe hedge your bets that way, too. One of the nice things, bringing it full circle, about something like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms / The Hedge Knight, HOAS, KOCCE, JRRM, is that it's not as big a spend. I don't think you need to immediately assume that you have to pull in all the Game of Thrones fans by saying Seven Kingdoms. You can just choose the better title, make a good show, and trust that people will find it if it's good. And if a few fewer find it immediately because they don't realize it's related to Game of Thrones, Seven Kingdoms, that's okay because you didn't spend the world on it and it can grow more naturally. So another reason why I am into the smaller scale thing they have going on.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, Seven Kingdoms, Knight, those both, there's a thing, I can't remember where I heard this. This was like a publishing story about titling books, about how publishers will try to get like a word in that people will know. So like,
sure,
like if your book has assassin, like getting that in because you're going to get a certain number of readers just based on the inclusion of a word like that. So I could see that a little bit with the title, but for something like Andor, like, I don't know the data for what you're saying, Victor, about not pulling in random people. I feel like the only people who would be off put by Andor as a title are the people who are like, why the hell is this guy getting his own show? But that's just my own personal bias. I did want to shout out a couple of comments. Divine Charika asks, I feel like the music has always been one of the greatest parts of both Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon, thanks to Rama Djawadi.
Do we know
who's composing for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms yet? I don't know that we do.
I mean, I don't think I know, because you talked to George R. R. Martin a while ago. Check out winterscoming.net for more on that. And if you didn't find that out, I don't think I know. I am okay with Rama Djawadi not doing every other show on television. It feels like there are four guys who get like every single TV show. If they haven't announced that Rama Djawadi is doing it, he probably isn't. I feel like they would have said so by now if he were. But he could be. It's possible. Apparently, you can do a lot if you have that slot. You're right. He's brilliant. Love him. Love his music. And Victor could be right, too. If they're just doing one show a year, House of the Dragon, Knights of Kingdoms, we're not sure. I'm not sure yet. I wouldn't mind trying something a little new, but we'll see. He is wonderful.
Yeah. I could totally go either way.
Yeah, I can go either way. Also, someone asked before, and Victor points out again, what's better, House of Dragon or Fire and Blood? Fire and Blood is a much better title. It's so much more exciting and interesting and mysterious. And I do take Victor's point that it probably pointed to Game of Thrones a lot more than Fire and Blood would. House of the Dragon invokes Game of Thrones more than House of Fire and Blood. I think the title Fire and Blood is fantastic. I think it's, again, short, punchy, original, just kind of exciting, dangerous. What's that about? And I think that House the Dragon was good and popular enough that it could have sustained that. But at least they didn't call it Game of Thrones : House of the Dragon. You know, that's the worst case scenario.
Yes.
And at least they're not calling it Game of Thrones : Knight of Seven Kingdoms. That would be bad. I don't really mind if it's called Knight of Seven Kingdoms or not. Or the Hedge. I prefer the Hedge Knight, but it's fine. As long as you don't give me one of those like name : name things.
Yeah, I think it is interesting to see how some of these big studios, they are all kind of hedging bets in their own way to like let people know, like, this is a franchise. Get invested with us for the long term, because Bubo points out, he said, Ramen is good, but I won't forgive him for skipping House of the Dragon's main theme, a.k.a. reusing the Game of Thrones theme for House of the Dragon. I would bet significant money, not that I have significant money, but if I had it, I would bet it, that was not 100% Rahman Djawadi's decision.
I would imagine
that at least some mandate for that came from HBO. I really, really hope A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms gets its own theme song. Like trust the viewers enough that they will show up. It is definitely time. That show feels like, you know, House of the Dragon has kind of fallen back on being a little self-referential. This was one of my issues with season two, like the unnecessary ties to Game of Thrones instead of just letting it tell its own story.
Yeah, we were there.
We were there. Yeah. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms does not need to do that. And I think the more they lean into it, not needing to do that, the better. A few other really quick things. Leo, I think, asked if A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms or The Last of Us is coming first. I'm pretty sure we have like confirmation The Last of Us is coming first. I think that's coming really. I think so. I think that's coming really early in the year. I can't remember if it was a filming thing, but I think we got signs pointing to like February, like early 2025 for The Last of Us, which fits with when season one premiered, which was January of 2023. I also, what you said about the title thing, and maybe this can be our segue, what you said about the title thing is really interesting to me, that if you make a good show, if you build it, the viewers will come, even if the title's a little weird at first. So my wife took a trip to the city recently, and while she was there, she over, yes, yeah, totally fine. Family event. She was, and yeah, so she was in New York City, overheard a bartender at a bar talking about this new show that they were really enjoying, The Penguin. She did not interject into this conversation, just kind of listened. This person described The Penguin to someone, talked all about it, hyped it up, never once mentioned it was a DC show. They were just talking about it like it was a crime drama. And I feel like that is such a testament to like the, you know, without that, the context of The Penguin as a DC villain. But if you're still getting hyped about the show and referencing the title and stuff, just based on the fact that it's a damn good show that earns that, it can just speak for itself. So I thought that was cool and kind of relevant to what we're talking about.
Can you imagine if they had called it like The Penguin, a Gotham crime story, or like The Penguin, a Batman joint, or something like that? You know, other networks would, but they didn't.
Batman joint. Yeah, totally. Well, it's a good example. I feel like that turns off. I mean, maybe I'm biased because we have to write these things in articles, but I find that a turn off. And it seems like, you know, people in chat who are joking about it do too. When you get into the colons for the title, it's like, what are we doing here? Do you really think that's a snappy title?
Do you think I write The Lord of the Rings : The Rings of Power whenever I write with that? No, I call it The Rings of Power. You can't make tell me that's the real title. It's not. You appended that ugly beginning onto it. I'm not obliged to use that. I'll fit it somewhere on the body of the article, but no. What is my idea? Yeah, I bet HBO loves to hear that. That is a great endorsement. Someone's talking about The Penguin in the wild overhearing, and they don't ever mention the DC show. That is towing the line correctly. Yes, the story of Batman.
Yeah, totally.
Your most popular villain, Victor. I agree. Or fourth, it's got to go like the Joker, number one, obviously. And then actually, every spot is pretty contested. You can go like, you know, Two-Face, the Riddler, Penguin, Poison Ivy.
Catwoman,
yeah. So yeah, third or fourth-ish. This show has been very good. It is a testament to how, because again, last week we talked about Joker Folie à Deux, which goes way too far afield of its source material, I think, in a way that made people angry. The Penguin's doing a great job of keeping enough of a tether to the Batman universe. It's about the Penguin. He's a famous villain. He is a gangster. He is the Penguin you remember from the Batman things. But it's forged its own path in a way that doesn't feel contrived. It doesn't feel like it's forced or strained. And the actual story it's telling is really compelling. They brought in this other character, Sophia Falcone, who is basically the second lead of the show, who's doing a great job of holding attention by herself. And kind of makes a great 1-2 shot with Colin Farrell as the Penguin. The show's killing it. It's one of the best I think I've seen of the year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I did not expect that going into it, that I would feel like, oh, this is one of my favorite shows of 2025. I was definitely one of those people before it came out that was like, why does everything need to be a franchise? Do we really need a spinoff about the Penguin, mm-hmm. Batman's third or fourth most popular villain? And I've been just so happy to have been proven wrong, because the Penguin is just an excellent show. And yeah, the last episode was probably my favorite. And it was all about Sophia Falcone and kind of how she ended up being the person she is. And I love, it was not what I expected in terms of why she went to Arkham and everything around that. I think it did a really good job playing with the whole Hangman thing, and filling in all the blanks with her backstory. The Penguin is just excellent. Like, I would recommend this to anyone at this point. It's basically Batman Sopranos. Like, it doesn't matter if you know anything about Batman, you could probably enjoy this show. Crime syndicates fighting it out. It's just excellent. Hard. And it is interesting to see it do kind of the opposite of Joker. If I was meaner, I'd maybe call it Joker Folly a Dud or something. But the Penguin, puns, or maybe that's just mean to myself and everyone who had to endure hearing that bad pun. I am really glad to see the Penguin doing as well as it is. And I think the reception speaks for itself.
Yeah, they'll call it. And again, it proves that whenever we do look at something that looks like a cash-in of some franchise, some spin-off TV show, movie, whatever, and our instinct, I think understandably, is to say, who needs this? Who asked for this? What are they doing? It looks like a cash grab. It doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't matter if it's the Penguin. Doesn't matter if it's the second and allegedly least of George R. Martin's Duncan Egg novellas. Doesn't matter like how many spinoffs in you are, if it's Andor, if you just apply your creativity and your passion to it, it can be great. And that's a reward in itself. I liked the episode. I will say, it wasn't my favorite. I have a question for you that maybe you would answer.
You've seen all of it. There an episode you liked more out of the first four, though?
The first three. I have this question for you, and perhaps I just missed it. So this episode is about Sophia Falcone in Arkham. You said it ties up the story. How did she get out? I still don't know that.
They did not answer that in the episode.
I feel like she was just out. Like, she's in there for a decade, involuntarily committed against her will. Not crazy, but her relatives say she's crazy and testify to that effect. So she gets in there, apparently inspired by Rosemary Kennedy, who was given a lobotomy at age 23 and stuck in institution by her father. More you know.
Whoa. Did not know that.
I know, right? Hey, man, it was the 60s. Actually, I don't know if it was. It could have been any period in the 20th century. But and then she's out and she's awesome and she gasses her whole family and then walks through the house with a gas mask and that sickening yellow gown. But I don't know how she got out. And I feel like that was like, I kept asking myself that the entire episode and like, wait, so how is she here? I feel like they didn't answer that question. It bugged me.
They did not answer that question. And I don't recall them really answering it in the early episodes either. She just kind of says like, I was rehabilitated, crazy eyes. but it does seem like, so one, and this is getting into spoilers, but we found out that the doctor who was treating her quit, basically. He's her therapist on the outside in the Penguin. But when she is out, she's also manufacturing the new drug based on the mushrooms that they used on the Arkham patients. Yeah. So I don't know if it's supposed to be alluded to that her and her brother developed, you know, maybe their own crime ring that worked through Arkham and eventually she got out that way. They did leave it ambiguous. You're right. I didn't mind that so much because it was having the decade jump made it so I didn't mind, because then it's just like you see her go in, you see how she was framed and how awful it was, her experience there and how terrifying. And then you basically see her hit the point where she does start to lose it. I love the line where she kills Magpie in the cafeteria.
Oh, remember her name, yeah.
And then is like, I fucking told you I was innocent, after she's just murdered her first person. I just chef's kiss to that scene and that line. I didn't, you're right, they didn't answer that. I didn't really mind that. Lee saying, and then she was just there for 10 more years. I'm like, okay, a lot can happen in 10 years.
What can happen in 10 years? Yeah, it's excellent. The act is at a very, very, very high level. I'm not sure what, I think on the word like iconic a lot. I think we all do. Something about like the visual representation of drama in a way that just hits right. Something about Sophia Falcone in a yellow cocktail dress evening gown with a gas mask walking through a house full of people she just murdered seems iconic, and it's come the right time. Like, it's Halloween around the corner. Like, I'm going to guess a lot of places are going to sell their yellow dresses and gas masks. That would be a good costume if anybody out there is wondering.
Yes, absolutely. There will be cosplays of that outfit in particular.
Dude,
no question.
Just get crazier and cooler the longer it goes on. I'm going to write a thing at the end of this season about her outfit. She wears some great shit.
I want to read that, because this show has had really good costuming all around, and especially for her, she feels like the character where they can have the most fun with it. And it seems like they have. So do you think this is going to end up being the best show of the year, or one of the best shows of the year? Like, what else is in competition for you?
The best show of the year is going to be Shogun. Like, at the end of the year, when we do our yearly show about the ranking the best 15 shows of the year, if Shogun is at the top, I will be surprised. But there's some good competition. There's been Shogun. There was Fallout was excellent. The Penguin's excellent. There have been some solid competition this year. Victor's mentioned Dune Prophecies around the corner. Who knows? That could head out of the park. HBO is having a solid year. And Leo asked, why'd you save her mom? I think her mom's already been dead. Her mom died in the flashback.
He's asking about
the kid's mom.
Carla Vitti is her name, and she didn't save her because Carla Vitti was one of the people who wrote a testimony she was crazy that got her locked in Arkham in the first place.
Oh yeah, she's gone.
She did. And Victor, I like what you said here about, I'm hoping Dune Prophecy takes the same direction the Penguin did in relation to its source material.
Yeah, maybe.
I hope so too. The most exciting thing I have found out about Dune Prophecy that came out with the Entertainment Weekly like reveal about the show last month is that it is not a direct adaptation of any Dune novel. It is set 30 years after the novel Sisterhood of Dune, which is about the start of the Bene Gesserit. So that means they have the room to tell their own story while still heavily referencing one of the books. So fingers crossed. I'm getting kind of hopeful that Dune Prophecy will be good because the Penguin's been great.
It doesn't pay to underestimate HBO. They turn it regular stuff. And HBO's been pivoting lately to this more IP-driven thing. I still think it might be danger in the very long term. But so far, you got The Last of Us. You got The Penguin. Hopefully Dune Prophecy. You got House of the Dragon. It's been quite solid. So I hope you stick to that, HBO, and don't let us down and keep blowing us away. And Leo, she killed the child's mother with gas. No one said she was nice. I mean, she's a villain, but they're all villains on here. So we just got to choose the ones who you find most bearable. JP, Warner Bros. Well, Joker bombed. Yes, true. Joker did bomb. Joker bombed hard. But other things are doing well.
Unseated like by Terrifier 3. This past
Dune
weekend
did great, right? This year HBO's killing it, but they have some things that are working and some things that are not working very well. I don't know if it'll wash out or how their balance sheet's looking. But they've had hits too, and they've had bombs.
Yeah.
You win some, you lose some. You're a country, you're rock and roll, et cetera, and so forth. And we'll be here to cover it all. Somebody up there mentioned the Agatha show, which might be a good way to transition into what are we watching. I do think that's not a bad comparison to The Penguin, because, you know, two superhero shows on at the same time, two superhero spinoffs, one about Batman's third most famous villain, one about, like, I don't know, like the 87th
very obscure.
Yeah, like 87. I'm like 387th most popular Marvel character, Agatha Harkness. That show's cute. I like that show. I'm being entertained. It definitely doesn't have the pull, something like The Penguin does. I said last week, it feels like it is entertaining itself, entertaining me, but it's kind of lightweight, which might be surprising because it is killing a lot of people. Like, a lot of characters have died on that show, including the main character, Agatha, from Agatha All Along. But also, I've watched enough Marvel. I have zero confidence that will stick. And I have
Agatha's not dead. What do you mean?
She got tossed into the mud and she sunk on her and she drowned last episode. What are you talking about? That was last week.
That mud's a secret door somewhere or something.
See, nobody believes it. Nobody believes it.
No,
nobody
thinks it's her last name. Of course. Of course not. There'd be no show.
So it's weird, though. So, like, why even bother doing that then in an episode if you know no one's going to buy it? Because we've all learned by now that you're never going to go that hard. I don't even know if I'd like it if they did. But I'm enjoying the show.
Yeah.
But it's just a little lighter weight. And it's nice.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like what you just said, I don't know if I would like it even if they did go that hard. Agatha is just kind of like fun Halloween vibes. That's what I go to it for. Yeah. And so far, it's been delivering on that front. I love all the witchy references to different movies and like, yeah,
sure, the clothes
I've been entertained.
The costumes are nice.
It is not. Let's put it this way. Agatha All Along is a show I have a good time watching and then I promptly forget about the next day. And I don't mean that as full shade. It's just not the sort of thing where I'm mulling it over in my downtime. Like, honestly, like The Penguin, which I have been thinking about between episodes. Decent. Like if you want a Halloween themed thing, I think Agatha is kind of perfect for that without going too hard. Like you said, it's nice to have a Marvel show that isn't terrible. But we're still a far cry from the early ones, I think.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we're like hanging on the edge of every episode of a Marvel show. It was probably like WandaVision.
Man, it's kind of
inconsequential, but it's not bad. It's nice. It goes down easy, but you're right. It's like a handful of Halloween candy.
Nice. Yeah. The candy corn of shows that's on right now. Yeah. I saw a clip someone was sharing the other day on Twitter of Sam Wilson's speech at the end of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is so it's after he dons the Captain America outfit. He's talking to like the politicians and it's basically the climax of the show, him basically saying to them like, you have all this power, what are you gonna do with it? Like that. And watching that scene, I was like, man, it's hard to believe Marvel shows used to have this in them, because it's been such a long time since we've had a scene as good as something like that scene in a Marvel show. So I'm enjoying Agatha, but it's still nowhere near those early shows.
And Cannibal the Dragon, hello, good to see you.
Hello.
Anything else you're watching, Daniel, or anything else anybody out there watching, reading, want to sound off on for a couple of seconds?
I don't think I have anything too much else to talk about watching wise. I watched it's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, very important Halloween season watch that obviously you have to do every once in a while. The main thing I've been reading that I've been enjoying a lot is The Hunger of the Gods by John Gwynne.
Nice.
Which is the second book in his Bloodsworn saga. The third book, The Fury of the Gods, comes out next Tuesday. So I'm reading that to get caught up. And this is like Norse fantasy, and not just like, oh, it's Norse inspired. Like, there's some shield maidens. They, you know, like, this dude is clearly a like Viking historian. He uses lots of language that's appropriate for that sort of culture. It's kind of like almost a retelling of Ragnarok, but in a fantasy way, which is kind of crazy because cool. Like Ragnarok's pretty fantasy in the first place. Yeah, those books are so, so good. And they're like gritty fantasy, like perfect if you like George R. R. Martin or Joe Abercrombie, like very much in that vein. So that has been eating a lot of my time this week, and it's been awesome. Better than most of the shows nice. I've been watching, so I'll just read instead. What about you? What else you been getting into?
Well, a lot of our folk are watching stuff. Victor saw Saturday Night, the movie by Saturday Night Live.
Oh, nice. Which
I thought looked interesting. I heard some mixed things about it. Interesting that you say, Victor, it should have been a 6-episode miniseries, because usually today everything is a miniseries. And more things are going to be movies. So it's good to see that maybe this was the well, not good to see, but interesting to see that it was the opposite way this time. Leo asks, I'm going to watch the new show, Joan, Sophie Turner as a jewel thief. I haven't, but I hear it's pretty cool. And she's getting buzzed about her performance. Quick watch House of Dragons season 1. Can't go wrong. Do you never have any choice. BookTube channels that you watch, Daniel?
I do. YouTube, as Victor yeah. says. Yes, I do. We don't really do a ton of BookTube stuff. That may change. Because we've
not yet.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Not yet. Not yet. I mean, if you don't know, I assume you know Daniel Green, that you're even asking about this. He's one I would check out. Library of a Viking is pretty good. I like Holly Hart's books too. She does a lot of roundups that are great. I'm blanking on other ones, but there are a lot of good channels out there. It's definitely a very active space that's worth digging into for sure.
Okay. I want to recommend one, but I don't know their name. And I, instead of like fumbling for 30 seconds in front of you trying to remember it and getting it wrong, I'm just going to skip it. There's one out okay. there. I could tell you what it's called. it'd be really embarrassing. Next, there's a lot of stuff to watch coming down the pike. I know that next week, in terms of shows, next week, I think, is what we do in The Shadows final season. I will be watching that. I'll try to get my hands on screeners for that if I can. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. So that's great.
Never love that show.
Hope it goes out. I hope it goes out on a good note. I know that next month is a lot of stuff. I think it's Silo, the second season. I know you're a fan of that first season. The second half of the seventh season of Outlander comes back in that tortured way they split those things. And Doom Prophecy and Arcane both coming out in the near future. So we'll honestly be full of television very, 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 very soon.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know which of those I'm most excited for, because that's a pretty solid four shows coming. It's Arcane's final season. Arcane was like rock solid. Well, it's animated, so whether you like that or not, that'll be a toss-up. Dune Prophecy, we'll see. Silo, the first season was great. Rebecca Ferguson can do no wrong. I can't wait for Silo. You reminded me of one other thing I'm watching, which is the Tomb Raider show on Netflix. Netflix just dropped its Tomb Raider animated show. It is profoundly mid, in my opinion. I played, it's supposed to be a sequel to the trilogy of games that came out recently, which I really liked those games. The show feels like they didn't really play them very closely because the characters make no sense at all coming off the back of the games, which were all about the character development. That one's getting really mixed reviews. It's getting some typical corners of the toxic fandom stirred up, as you might expect.
Sure. Animated Lara Croft isn't hot enough, that kind of discourse.
Exactly. Which, I'm going to be frank, I really don't understand why we're having that conversation. Like, I know it's because people have lizard brains and they're awful and whatever. But This is the same Lara Croft that was in the last three games. It's not like they gave her a crazy makeover for the animated series. She looks more or less the same as she did in those three games. But yeah, it's been a weird discourse of people complaining.
We'll move on. I guess when I hear that kind of thing, I guess it just kind of lays bare that I don't understand or watch things, I guess, in the way a lot of folk watch them. So that implies that a lot of people played or watched Lara, like Tomb Raider games or shows, like wanting Lara Croft to be their girlfriend, I guess. And so the failure of her to meet their standard of beauty hurts them. I guess if I didn't do that.
Yes.
So it's like, sure, she looks how she looks. It's fine. But I guess I don't think about people watching kind of things that way. So it always surprises me when that kind of thing comes up. And I'm like, oh, I'm just not part of this. And that makes me a little sad.
Because I like hear part that.
Of the zeitgeist.
Because it's mostly awful.
Why don't we move on to the WIC News lightning round, where we go through 10 stories, 8 stories, some stories that we can find in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them, and no more, no less. Daniel, guess what?
What?
They're in order, and I'm going to ask you first.
Ooh.
Daniel, please put 20 seconds on the clock, producer Richard. Here's our first look at Suzanne Collins' upcoming new Hunger Games prequel book, Sunrise of the Reaping, about a young Woody Harrelson, Mitch Abernathy, when he was in the Hunger Games.
Yep. This, like you said, cover for Sunrise on the Reaping. It got revealed today. Hamish Abernathy's story feels a little like a cash grab, mainly because they announced the movie before we even had like a book cover. Like they announced the movie before we even knew there was a book. But, you know, Suzanne Collins is pretty solid, so I'm sure it'll be a good time. All right, Dan, Netflix is making a Pride and Prejudice TV show.
Pride and Prejudice, man. It's one of those shows that books just keep getting adapted over and over and over, like dozens of times. It came out in 18, dickety, whatever. A TV show. Yeah, it's been done before. I think Colin Firth, a very famous version of Pride and Prejudice that my mother used to watch and rave about. I think a lot of women her age watched and raved about it. And now it's going to be a Netflix show, and they'll cast some young people in it, and it'll be popular again, and we'll talk about Pride and Prejudice again. Jane Austen. Daniel. Will you see this? Henry Cavill, nerd savant, nerd king, is going to star in a Voltron movie. I think that's the one about the robots turning into a bigger robot.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I always get Voltron mixed up with like the Power Rangers, who also had robots that turned into a robot, I think. I could care. This is one I don't particularly care about, honestly. Will I see it? Maybe if I really have nothing else to do and I feel like getting drunk at a movie. I hope that he has a good time making it, though. Okay, here's one. So iRobot director Alex Proyas asks Elon Musk to give back his designs for robo-taxis, robo-vans, and allegedly autonomous robots.
Yeah, so Elon Musk had this event where he debuted these robotaxi vans, kind of robots that may have been controlled by people on the stand. And they did look a lot like the sci-fi designs from the movie I, Robot by The Crow and director Alex Proyas. And he snarked on Twitter about it. That's kind of it. It's funny. Where is the future? Is the future, like, does it look futuristic or is it futuristic? That's the question we're dealing with right now.
Grifters, man.
Okay. Oh, okay. Maybe I didn't put them in order. Good call for switching these. Daniel, talking about The Witcher, a big old fantasy show, it's coming back for season 4, but the role of Vesemir will no longer be played by Kim Bodnia. That character is being recast, not unlike Henry Cavill is leaving and recast with Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah, so this is an unofficial report right now. We don't have confirmation from Netflix, but yes. Apparently Kim Bodnia is not coming back for season 4. Vesemir is not even in this part of the books, so I'm viewing all of this with a very skeptical eye. I liked Kim Bodnia, but I really didn't like the way the show portrayed Vesemir. So we got nowhere to go but up. I'll give it a chance.
Cool.
This is exciting. Invincible season 3 is coming out on Thursday, February 7th.
Great. I like Invincible a lot. Superhero show, animated, kind of subversive, but also earnest, violent, but also sweet. Really kind of like a lore rabbit hole kind of show you go down, it keeps like no bottom for all the crap they thought up. Fun, well done, well acted, well animated, and coming back a year after the last season, and no break this time in the middle. So rock on. I'll watch that one.
Amazing. That's
a
good one.
Here's a fun one. Daniel, people bought $21 million worth of Game of Thrones props, costumes, and so forth through Heritage Auctions over the weekend. A version of the Iron Throne sold for around $1.5 million.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think I saw that this is one of, if not the biggest auction for a television show. Second most. It's really cool. I love that these things are now out there. People own them. You know, we're not making new episodes of Game of Thrones. They didn't need to hang on to this stuff. So I think that's pretty sweet. If only I had a few mil to burn, maybe I could have had an Iron Throne. All right, and here it is, our final story of the WIC News Lightning Round today. It's Crypto, the super dog from James Gunn's upcoming Superman movie, who looks a little like Scruffy from the back.
Whoa, he does. Scruffy, come compare. Scruffy, get up. There he goes. The super dog is going to be in the Superman movie. I wonder what kind of movies is going to be. Is it going to? It can't be that serious if they're going to have the super dog in it. I'm sure he'll try to toe the line between be all things. He does kind of look like Scruffy. Scruffy, you're super. Good for you.
Oh, he's so
end
cute.
Of opinion. And hey, that's our show. You like our show? We like you like our show. Come back for show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST or 3 p.m. if you're on the East Coast, 1 p.m. in the mountains, and noon in sunny California. We're also available in podcast form wherever podcasts are downloadable, be it iTunes, Google Play, elsewhere. I tried to get Scruffy to sit there the entire time, but he wouldn't. And now I wish he'd been there the whole time, but whatever. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being. And although we couldn't be at the Game of Thrones auction, if anybody wants to sell me Cersei Shame Bell, which I believe went for $100,000, I can introduce you to Mr. Hamilton. Goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and matching technology that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 75% of employers claim Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other online job sites, leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences daily. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Join today by heading to Indeed.com/podcasts11 and get a £100 sponsored job credit. That's Indeed.com/podcasts11. Terms and conditions apply.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing.
Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.